Welcome to Teaching Restored, where we get to talk about how to teach the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. We are the lucky ones because we love doing it so much.
It is true.
It is true. We get to, I through this whole journey, this is episode 83, I think, that we have done. I just see more and more of my life just as teaching. Over and over again in different ways. It's been pretty neat. Okay, so we're going to talk today about a different type of teaching. It's not kind of the usual way of teaching. So I'm going to start this off, Julie.
Yeah.
Julie, does God love everyone?
Yes.
Really? Does he love everyone equally?
Yes.
So he doesn't love some more than others?
Define love.
Okay, thank you. All right. Look at you. You. Wow. Okay, why did you go there?
Because as I really think about that question, it really, like, if you are defining love as, like, intrinsic, like godly love, like it's different than if you're defining love. Oh gosh, I just was not sure how you were defining it.
Okay.
I don't know why it went there. It needed a caveat.
It did. It does, doesn't it? Yeah. And yet so often we get questions asked of us, of our faith, by others in sound bites.
Right.
It's as if someone says, does God love everyone? Does God love everyone equally? And you've got to answer right there, and you better be right.
Right. That's
such and what you say will represent not only how you feel, but also how the church feels. And you better get it right. So
in that person's mind, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Right. So let me ask you, I'm going to do this. I'm going to nail this down, but they're asking it so off the cuff and it's very soundbite-ish, right? So here, let me give you an expanded version of those questions. If God loves everyone, okay, you say God loves everyone, right? Why then does God exclude some people from going to the temple to witness a marriage? If God is all about families and you say God is in your church, then why does he break families apart in this way? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This question will be asked around the world many, many, many different times. Yeah. Especially now in the spring when many people are getting sealed in the temple, and some families may not be able to join there and see the sealing and witness this, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to ask the question, if you are all about families and God loves everyone, why is he excluding us? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's your answer?
Well, so it's interesting because go back to my question about the definition of love.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Like, is that saying if I'm not invited, I must not be loved?
Right. Right.
Like,
it has so much behind it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And you know, it's interesting because when you're asked a question like that, I think that your instinct is to defend, but I want you to think about how any answer I were to give right now, no matter how, based in doctrine and faith it is, how much of it are you going to hear? Mm-hmm. Like, you're asking that question. Listen to even the tone that you asked the question with, which I realize it wasn't, it was a little bit, just kind of adding some inflection and everything else. But I suspect that's how you would actually get that question, is with some emotion. Really. It's not just a, even if it's like curiosity, like there's an emotion behind a lot of these questions, or confusion, or a story, or a something.
Yeah.
But there's also an implication that they're defining love.
Right.
Like saying that this, and anytime you exclude someone, it's because you don't love them.
Right. Right. Let me give you another example of it. And you described that so well. Here's another example. We have a family member who has a child who has same-sex attraction. Mm-hmm. This family member and this child are not members of the church. And they have, and basically we've talked with them before, and it's your church does not believe that that God, I mean, how do I say this? God, you think God doesn't love them. Like, no, that's no, what, where do you, I mean, they start making some assumptions in there from things that they've heard or that they've witnessed or that right. they felt they have seen or their differing definition of, right? And so they went on and on in one particular case about how we do not like those who have the same sex attraction and we don't allow them to do certain things and da da da. I mean, it went on and on and was like, wow, no, you're getting this all wrong. Getting this all wrong. But there's, like you said, but there's a lot of emotion in there and it's really difficult to explain something when there's and really what they're trying to say, it's not so much of a question that they are trying to ask as a statement that they are trying to make to you, typically, right?
Right. Typically, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Like they're, in other words, they are trying to share a feeling more than they're trying to ask a question.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And I have found that sometimes they want to know, and sometimes they just want to say, this is how I feel, by asking the question, but they're roping you in and either making you defend your position or what they think is your position or their position and saying, which side are you going to take?
You got to be a little bit cautious though, because I don't think, like, with the way you just described that sounded mm-hmm. like they have a manipulative agenda.
And I not think no you're right person. Right, I agree. I don't think that they have a manipulative agenda. But that is almost the outcome of it unintentionally.
Right. That it feels like they're trying. So here's another, I have this thought that keeps popping into my mm-hmm. mind about an experience I had the other day. So I'm writing a book about communication in marriages, right? And I have a friend and I asked her and her partner if they would, you know, take, I said, when I get to the point where I want some people to take some pages, would you guys do that for me? And she's like, you want our kind? And I'm like, what? I'm like, what? And she's like, well, I just thought like that you, and I'm like, have I ever made you feel? And she's like, no, actually never. I don't know why. She's like, that just popped out of my mouth. But she said, you have to understand that my experience has been so like,
yes,
like isolating.
Right.
And so her assumption was, that because I am a member of the church, that I wouldn't, but I mean, she was so clear. She's never felt anything but love and support from us, but it's just her habit. And so I think that a lot of people, when they come and ask a question like that, it's not even personal. Part of it is just so loaded with experience and emotion. And they are almost like whoever is asking the question comes with it because it's become such a truth to them. Mm-hmm. They're like, I don't know how to reconcile this. And so it feels more aggressive than it's intended to be, perhaps.
Yeah, I agree.
Understandably.
Yes, 100% understandably. And then on the opposite, I will say that there are those who come at that on a combative level also, right? So there's the spectrum in there, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I just wanted to make sure that the way that you were phrasing it,
yes, nobody thank you.
Misinterpreted as you assuming people have a manipulative agenda, because I know you don't think that way.
Correct. Yeah, thank you. So in those kind of situations, how do we teach? Assuming that teaching in that is the correct thing to do. Sometimes it's you know, I'm not touching this and we shouldn't touch it. And now is not the time to teach, you know, to talk about this. So assuming it is, assuming we feel that, you know what, it's appropriate to talk to this person about this. It's appropriate to try to explain this. The first thought I had around that is that I'm not going to say we have to. Probably more often than not, though, we need to really think deeply about these things, because we're not coming at this topic from the same way they are. So we almost have to put ourselves in their shoes and say, what are they thinking? How are they thinking? How did they come to this conclusion? Because in the questions they may be asking us, a lot of times is so far from the truth, from what we understand, that it could never, how could you ever, have I ever said anything, derogatory or anything, right? Have you ever felt that way? No, right? Okay. And so we have to understand, what are their experiences? What are their thoughts? What have they heard, to put that together to make that a thought of theirs, right? So we actually have to think real deeply about it. And then we cannot have soundbite discussions.
That's good.
Right?
Hold on, I'm going to write a thought. Yeah.
So I think too many times we're asked a soundbite question and we feel, because often it is in the time space or in the circumstances under which the only thing that could be contributed afterwards is a soundbite answer. And so we don't have the time.
We get backed into a soundbite corner, basically, is what you're saying, by the way that the question was posed, but by the way that we respond, we've taken the soundbite bait.
Correct. We have taken the soundbite bait by that. That is exactly right. But what else do we do at the same time, right? I mean, we're backed into this corner. We're asked the soundbite question. Do we ignore it, or do we move on, or just say, I'm not going to answer you now, or what? Or do we give a soundbite answer that isn't actually correct, or nor does it typify our feelings or express our feelings in any way? It's just a shortcut way of doing it. So that's a really difficult thing, but we have to, and I'm not saying in all circumstances again, but if we really want to teach, if we really want to explain it and we feel it's appropriate, we cannot do it in soundbite answers or a soundbite discussion. And if, and the third thing I wrote down here is that consideration of the audience needs. I kind of brought that in already of, again, where are they coming from? We have, why are they asking this question, or why are they expressing this thought in it? So let me clarify
something. You said we have to think deeply ourselves about it. Are you talking about like you by yourself think deeply about the question so that we have an answer we're confident in? Or are you saying we ought to think deeply about how we respond so that we're making sure we're responding appropriately? I just want to understand.
Thank
what you.
What
you meant by that.
The answer is actually both. Because, as I was asking you the questions at the beginning, you said, so define love.
Right.
I bet if anyone, just about anyone, if I asked someone, how do you define love? The answer would be, well, this is how I define, well, actually, what is it? Well, now that I think about it, well, wow, that, you know, I had never thought about that situation. Well, right. And it would go, that's the kind of deep thinking. We take so much of the things for granted. God's love. Great. We talk about God's love all the time in the church. What does that mean? Does that mean that because I have one blessing that you don't have, that God loves me more than you?
Right. So what you're saying is that when a person poses the question, try and understand the real question.
Yes.
Right?
But that is from their perspective. You also have to understand the question from your perspective, because it's very often that we probably haven't thought about it deeply enough to be able to properly answer that.
Well, so here's the stinky thing about that, though, is that you're not going to have time to think about it.
Exactly. In that moment.
And so that could be problematic. Here's the other part. All the thinking in the world that you do is not actually going to help you as much as you asking questions of them to understand where they're coming from better. Because I think that like you can analyze that in your mind and try and anticipate it and try and like, but we just frankly might not even understand what their experience is, right? That's a big part.
So I would agree and disagree at the same time. Okay. And here's why the part I would probably and it's not a disagree as in you're wrong, because you're actually very, very right. But I want to say, in the thought of us thinking about our situation or how we think about it, as we do that, we start bringing up questions that we've never asked ourselves before. And then we're realizing that, like the definition of love, right?
And then
as you start thinking about them and their position, you realize they have a very different definition of love than I do, or that they're saying. So what is my definition of love compared to their definition of love? And you're doing both at the same time almost.
Part of what I hear you saying is that we need to kind of do an exercise in openness. Like what we're trying to do is think about it enough that we come to recognize, oh, here's some of the, what do I feel? And it opens us up to, and there's this whole Pandora's box of what they feel and their experience and everything else. And so it kind of creates curiosity, receptivity, flexibility, which is the right state of mind and heart for us to be in when we're responding to a question.
Yeah, good.
Is that kind of what you mean?
I like that. Yeah, okay. A lot. I have found that when I do this, when someone asks me a question like this, or maybe we've had it all where we, you know, maybe accused you or your church feels this way, and we say no, and it's in a soundbite way, and it's hard to answer. We go back. I found that when I go back, I start learning stuff about what I believe that I've never realized I believed. And it's,
I got you, like stuff about what you personally, Kevin Jones, believe because of that soundbite question that you got, because you're thinking more about it.
Right, right. And I start diving in. Okay, what is the definition of God's love? And then I start searching the scriptures and conference talks and other things and trying to understand, how do you define God's love? Because let me write down or read some of this. Because we have heard, and I'm mixing some things here, the potential for and the receiving of blessings is an indication of God's love for his children. However, can we define God's love by what blessings we do have and what we don't have?
And what are we calling a blessing?
And what are we calling a blessing? See, and it just kind of snowballs and you start to really dissect what you have learned over the years and from the last episode and a future episode at the same time, we take these phrases that we say all the time that we don't realize what do they mean? And we don't like last time we talked about Zion, right? Okay, let's dive in. Well, what do you mean by Zion? And how do we create that, right? And we're going to do that with some more later on. But this is another one, God's love, that we really take for granted. And so I wrote down, define God's love. How do we measure God's love? Is it by our wealth? Right. Well, then that, I mean, you know, some people God loves and some people he doesn't, right? Is it by physical or mental faculties? Oh, yeah. Obviously, God loves Julie more than he loves me because you're smarter than I am.
In my mind, I'm like, oh no, that is the falsest. You're not supposed to lie, Kevin. He now loves me more because you're a liar. Just kidding.
Okay.
The thing that I started thinking of is, I'm like, does God love hot people more? I'm like, no, definitely not. But I'm like, I was like, that's such a ludicrous thing. But it went into my mind. I'm like, who are the hottest people I know? Do I think God loves them more than me? Sorry, it's terrible. But you said it.
That is pretty funny. Yes. But it's those kind of things, right? Then
we do. We have some assumptions that we make in our mind that we don't even know that we're making.
Yes, absolutely, all the time, 100%. So we, you know, okay, we dive into that of, okay, what blessings have we received or have we not received? And because, you know, am I not as blessed because that person has that attribute, but I don't have it and I can't get this under control and da-da-da-da-da. Well, then, if we look at what, going back to the temple example, God loves, obviously, and from someone else's point of view, you think God loves you more because you can go to the temple and you can witness your son or daughter's sealing marriage, but I can't go and see the marriage myself. So how is that? So you feel you're above us, above me? You think, ow. So I, in trying to answer those kinds of questions, I've come up with a few things that may help. The first thing is they have to want a desire to know the answer. If they're throwing it out, it's very possible that they just want to throw it out and they don't want a serious sit down, let's discuss answer.
Well, and we've talked about this, like sometimes they need emotional air and that's all it is. Like they feel emotionally constipated. This question is a way for them to express some of that. And you have to give them some emotional Miralax to relieve the constipation before they're actually going to be able to hear anything that you have to say in the form of an answer.
That's right. And we don't endorse any products, by the way, but yes, there.
Oh,
this is an advertisement.
It is not an emotional stool softener.
There we go. No, that sounds gross and weird. Anyway, wow, how did we digress?
I'm so sorry.
Wow.
I'm trying to make an analogy work without being gross, and I got gross.
No, we're good. That's so funny. Okay, so first, we'll get back to it. Number zero, they have to, before you even begin, they have to want to know the answer. And if they don't want... Just ask. Say, hey, that's a really, really good question. And I can give you a quick answer right now, but it really won't be representative of how I feel or how the church feels. Do you really want an answer to that? Because if so, I would be happy to sit down with you and talk to you about that and try to understand your perspective more and try to give you an appropriate answer from what you're really trying to say. And if they're like, yeah, fine, but they never make time for it, they're like, okay, then, you know, because how is someone going to say, no, I just wanted to throw that in your face, right? But you have to try to understand. So once you, let's say that they do want to go beyond the superficial and really have a question, then Julie.
Kevin, I have to say it before you move on because it's eating me alive. Okay. I know you're going to make your next point. And so I'm so sorry. But another way to know if they really want an answer is to say it back to them. Like just mirror back what you heard from them. Like you have to be able to do that because part of what you are doing through that is making sure you even understand the question. And if you mirror it back to them and it came at you with that much kind of aggression and big words and things like that, then they might correct themselves and say, I didn't mean for it to sound so accusatory. You know, do you see what I'm saying?
Like, yes, yes.
So actually going to an empathic skill and reflecting it back will also help you weed out whether or not they're genuinely interested in the answer. And that's, they might reframe their question as part of that. Okay, you can move on now. I just need to say
No, thank you. Thank you. That's huge. That is really very, very valuable way of responding to it so that you can get more clarity. And so they can in a way as well. Okay. Thank you. Right. I love that. Thank you. Then one thing you can, I don't know that these are in order, but some things you can do is come up with or try to anticipate a common understanding of terms. Because if someone says you think God loves you more because da, 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 right. Then dive in. Okay. Well, what is evidence of God's love? I mean, you know, again, if someone is hot, does God love them more than that, right? What are we thinking there? Then use really basic similar principles. So, for example, if someone is a doctor and they have privileges to treat people, does that mean society loves them more and values them more than someone who can't do that? Well, no. I mean, maybe socially, on a very shallow social level, yeah, maybe, but overall, no. It's just that they worked to become a doctor in that area and then have the ability to go do that. I mean, just like anyone else in another area might progress to go do something else, and they have something that the doctor doesn't have, right? I mean, it's what have you put forth, what effort have you put forth, and what direction have you gone? And so, when I talk about use very basic, similar principles. There are principles in life that we can use that can exemplify what we're talking about, that a lot of people may say, oh my goodness, the temple garment is so weird. Mm-hmm. Well, do you feel like, I mean, and I'm not saying that this is the way you should respond, but we can almost think of it as, do you think the military uniform is weird? Well, no. Well, why not? What do they each represent? But if we can break it down to something that they understand, then it's, oh, okay. Okay. It's not so, there's not a lot of mysticism to it, or it's not foreign, but it brings it to that. You know what? You have experience in this already. You already understand this. You just haven't applied that understanding to this topic. So let's do that.
So a caution though, because mm-hmm. I think I hear what you're saying. You're like, you almost have to, like, I was thinking about this the other day because there was a comment that was made from somebody of a different faith to one of the youth in our ward that they heard from an adult leader, a youth leader, something like that at their church. And I don't know any of the specifics, but it was like, the Mormons are crazy. Here is evidence, kind of a comment. Okay. And it was interesting because my husband was meeting with this person and had a discussion with them and was able to make it not feel weird by using exactly what you just said, kind of something that was similar, a similar principle that they totally accepted that then applied, you know, here, mm-hmm. well, then why could this not be similar? Here's the caution though, even as you were describing it to me just then, like you were describing it to just me, because I think I'm the only person having a conversation with you right now. I realize you're talking to other people, but as you were describing it just then, I started to actually think you sounded combative or defensive.
Sure.
Or whatever. And yep. So you have to be really careful that you, first of all, step one cannot be omitted, which is figuring out whether or not this is a genuine question. And then there has to be some discussion. It can't be, remember, teach just because it rhymes with preach should not be equated with it. Mm-hmm. And so if your effort to teach in the answer that you give is in any way sounding like you're elevating yourself above them, or, you know, I'm going to teach you something, you just don't want it to sound condescending. And so the way that you're framing that has to be very coming from a place of humility. And even saying, I don't know if this is going to make any sense to you, but let me see if I can give an example that might be more relatable.
Yes.
You know, just preface it with something that feels a little bit more like, this is what I'm trying to accomplish, instead of, oh, you think that? Well, would you think that about this? Like, do you think that this is weird?
Yes, very, very good. Yes.
And so you have to make sure that you take the time to insert that instead of going, oh, I have an analogy that's going to prove the point, and then it sounds more condescending or preachy.
Thank you. So the example that I gave in that concept there, should not be taken literally as in that's how you do it. It's the principle of that is something that you can use. Yeah. But and actually, so I do this all the time with Kelly. She'll say, so what happened? And I'll explain something. She goes, oh, you did not say it that way. And I'm like, actually, no, I did not say it that way. Yeah. I just said it to you that way because we're short on time and that's the way it is, right? I mean, it's very different. She goes, oh, okay, I'm so glad you didn't say it that way, right?
Right?
But
right, Todd and I have that.
Yeah. But it's the same thing, right? Just, and I guess anything that we talk about on this podcast, we may not say, or we may say, okay, here's the principle. This is the thought behind it. That doesn't mean go out and use those exact words, right? Because right. You're right. It may sound combative. It may sound completely wrong. We're not saying how to do that, but that's something you could use. So that's a really good point to make though.
And part of why I feel the need to clarify it is because I do think that sometimes when it comes to teaching practices, people take a practice and they latch onto the practice. Mm-hmm. But you have to remember the why behind the practice.
Exactly.
And then there has to be. And so I just want to make sure that these things aren't taken as sound bites themselves. What we're cautioning against is sound bites. So don't take something as a sound bite and then apply it in isolation.
Well, Kevin and Julie said, right, they said to do it this way and it failed. And we have to have the bigger discussion around that soundbite. Yeah. Exactly. I love it. Thank you. I love this. I love this. And again, this is not a soundbite thing. This can't be used all the time. But one thing you can do is use unique church resources to back up what you're saying. For example, you may use the Book of Mormon, the Doctrine and Covenants. You may use conference talks. Those are unique to the church to say, you know, someone says, well, why do you believe this? And again, I'm going to shorten this, but you could say, well, we really don't believe that. Let me give you an example. And actually, I did this with a discussion with a preacher of another a pastor of another church. He said, you believe this? And I said, we don't. He goes, yes, you do. I said, we don't. Let me show you, if I may. Pull up a conference talk. And I said, that is what we believe. And what by using those unique church resources, it takes the kind of authority away from you saying, oh, well, you just believe that, but your church really believes. Just to say, no, exactly. we there's some, I was about to say discongruence. I don't know that that's even.
Disconnect,
sure. Disconnect between what we believe and what you're thinking. Not that that's bad because we all have those moments of everything. So we just need to figure this out, right? Not that you're bad having that.
Just in case somebody missed what was said just a minute ago, because they took a little cat nap in the middle of the podcast. Again, with what you're saying, this would be a Kelly moment. You didn't just say no. No, that's not actually what we believe. You probably had a bigger discussion, asked them a couple questions.
That's exactly what it was.
And then you were able to say, hey, so here, I'm a member of the church. I'd love to, if you're receptive to it, I'd love to show you even, mm-hmm. you know, some information, like from a very humble,
yes,
not a, no, we don't. Yes, you do. No, you don't.
Yes.
Just in case.
Let me prove you wrong.
It. Yeah. That was not the intent. That was a soundbite.
Remember,
this is in the context of a larger discussion.
Very good. Thank you. And so I think overall, we just need to remember that these soundbites, it is really difficult to answer anything substantively. Uh-oh.
Shoot!
Cut this part out of the podcast.
Whatsoever.
There you go. It's really difficult to do in sound bites. And substantively. Dang it. That's good.
Substantively. No,
I am sorry. We are putting all of you through this.
We've made up so many words the last two episodes.
I know.
We've made up so many words.
We need to have our own dictionary, Julie.
I'm sorry, everyone.
Sorry we had to put you all through that. Anyways. Okay, so I guess getting back to it, when when people come at us with, come at us, and that sounds combative, even if they're not trying to be combative, but they just want to know, and it's on a soundbite level, we have to understand, do they just want to get air that, have the emotional air, like you said, or do they want an answer? And if so, then we can't do it in a soundbite way. If they want to learn and they're willing to have a discussion around that, then we need to dive into our assumptions. We need to understand what we assume and then try to understand what they assume. And part of that, like you said, is reflecting back the question, making sure that you truly empathetically understand what they're trying to say, understand them first, and then you can have a bigger discussion. And I have found that almost every single time when a soundbite question is thrown at me and I reply in a soundbite way, it almost never goes well. Almost never. And it's much rarer that I get to sit down with someone and have a larger discussion around it. And when we do that, it almost always goes really, really well. And I mentioned one time I was in Alabama and I had a discussion like this with someone who has his doctorate in the dialect of Greek that the New Testament was written in. So he knew it really, really well. We came out with two things, he came out with two main thoughts in the end. We spent three lunches. We went out to lunch with each other, like an hour and a half each. And we just dove in. What do you believe? How do you believe this? And went through the whole thing. And it was great. Two things. Number one, 98% of what we believed was the same.
Right.
When he thought there was like huge disparity between it, 98% of what we believed is the same. And the second thing that he realized is that we're still going to hell, but that's okay from my perspective.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
He said, that 2%. Yeah. You're still going to hell because of it. And I said, okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
All right. Yeah.
Too bad for you.
Yep. Yep. We're not going to agree on that one. Yeah. We're not going to agree on that one. And that's okay. That's all right. But at least we understood each other more. I learned about him. He learned about me and our different ways of seeing it, but it wasn't soundbite-ish at all. Mm-hmm. And we get trapped into the soundbites too often.
Well, I think we take the bait.
We do.
And I think that.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say one of my takeaways from this is actually to not take the bait a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. That you're suggesting really try hard to have a deeper conversation and really try hard to, you know, make it a better discussion instead of question, answer, question, answer, question, mm-hmm. answer. Mm-hmm. Because what we're criticizing other people of consistently when they have anti-Mormon beliefs mm-hmm. is the fact that they're based on sound bites. So if we're responding to soundbite questions with soundbite answers, we're perpetuating that problem.
Exactly. Yes, we are. And but it's natural to do that, but we have to resist that, or we have to, I don't want to say resist it, because we have to respond in some way. So yeah. I don't have the best answer for how to do this. All I know is that when I have taken those soundbite questions and I have gone and done my research, I have learned more about myself, learned more about what I believe, learned more truth than in a lot of other circumstances or a lot of other things that have prompted me to dive in deeper to into the scriptures, into the words of the prophets. It's been some of my most favorite times when I have studied the scriptures and studied the gospel is from those soundbite questions that I can take back and totally dissect. What is love? And actually I've done that exact one before. What is love? And how do we measure God's love? Do we measure God? Should we even measure God's love? What? I mean, is that even a thing anymore? Right. And boy, it's been completely rewarding for me.
So Like, it's really cool that you're saying this because I hear a couple of things. One of them, like I said, is that, you know, try not to take the bait. Instead, try to make it a better, deeper discussion and then, but still give people an answer. Be genuine. Have some dialogue about the topic, right? You're not suggesting just ignore people or, you know, say, I can't talk to you about this. You're suggesting, but the effort should be, the goal should be not to give a soundbite answer, but instead to open up a better, deeper discussion. But then the other is to use that as a prompt in your own life to dig a little deeper. And that, I think that's beautiful, because even if you give a really stupid answer and then you feel like an idiot and you ruminate on it for like 20 hours and you're like, why did I say that? How, I could have said it differently. This is what I should have said. Skip it, skip beating yourself up and go straight to okay, let's figure out how I really feel about this. Let's figure out what this really means to me and take it as an invitation.
Yeah. And I have done that with so many different things. A lot of the hard things about, or what people might consider the hard questions about the church, I've done that with as well. And it is so rewarding. Again, some of my best times of studying the gospel are from deep questions I didn't know I had, that I should have asked a long time ago.
Right.
Didn't know to ask.
And that we're often prompted by somebody else.
Yeah. Right.
Like, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah.
So takeaways from the day, of course, we will get soundbite questions. How do we do that? Do we even turn that into a teaching moment? Because maybe we don't. But then again, maybe we do. And if we do, how can we go about doing that? We've laid out some different things to be thinking about to do that. And I have my journals that I've shown, my study journals from scriptures. And a lot of my study journals are from those kinds of questions. And I can go back to them and go, okay, what was it that I thought about that? And how do I again explain this to someone? I've written it down already. I can go review it and go, oh yeah, just remind myself. And then I can have a good discussion with someone. So
that's great.
That is a huge plug for having a study journal and writing in it. That's one of my favorite tools there.
That's awesome. That's fantastic. All right.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Julie, for coming on this journey with me. I appreciate it. Thanks. Awesome. Thanks everyone for coming on this journey with us as we learn about teaching the restored gospel of Jesus Christ. We love it. It's one of our most favoritest ever things to do. There's another
made-up word.
Another made-up word. Yeah, there we go again.
We're so good at that.
Yeah, we are. Thanks, everyone. Bye.